T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's a nice bottle opener, by the way.
It is.
My wife makes me hide it, but I do bring it out and show it to guests coming over. So well, thank you.
Thank goodness the keywords are a little cleaner than the
yes,
stuff
they
we
are.
Talk about.
What is it this hour?
Eyes. E-Y-E-S is the keyword for cash. One more time, it's eyes. Text that keyword to 72881 for your chance to win $1,000. Again, the number to text, 72881, and the keyword eyes, E-Y-E-S. If you don't win right now, and we hope you do, your next chance to win is tomorrow at 8:12 with Dave Lee. Message and data rates may apply. Please never, ever text and drive.
You know, we've all become dependent, some would argue overly dependent, on the internet.
For sure. Like if there's no Wi-Fi, we go nuts.
Yeah, people lose their minds. Where's my cell signal? Right. Where's my Wi-Fi? The FCC is set to repeal the Net Neutrality Act on June the 11th. According to the chairman of the FCC, quote, these unnecessary and harmful internet regulations will be repealed, and the bipartisan light touch approach that served the online world well for 20 years will be restored. The Republican-led FCC voted along party lines back in December to repeal the Obama-era net neutrality rules, which were intended to prevent internet providers from blocking, speeding up, or slowing down access to specific online services.
So now you're saying the Republicans voted to block, slow down, and kind of limit access to specific online services?
They want more of a free market approach. And not everybody is on
board. These
are
the same people who say, give me my freedom to text and drive in the car, but slow down my internet.
A different group of Republicans.
Okay.
I don't think the two are related, but, free market, is that the right approach? With us to provide some perspective is
I need some, obviously.
Dr. Chris Terry is Assistant Professor of Media Ethics and Law. It's good to have you with us, Doctor.
Hey, it's nice to be back. Thanks again.
Why should the average listener driving home on a Tuesday care about net neutrality?
Well, the main reason is that the repeal of the rule that the FCC is now about to implement here in June changes the balance of power. Currently, the user sort of determines what content they have access to, and your ISP, your internet service provider, delivers that content to you at sort of a pre-described speed. The change in the rules will allow them to shift that balance of power, and your ISP will ultimately determine at what speeds and even to some degree what content you're allowed to access.
Okay. So come June 11th, what's going to change?
Well, what's going to change is the rule that's sort of been pending for a while. As you pointed out in your introduction there, the vote was actually in December. The rule was actually put onto the books in February, but hadn't passed all of the regulatory hurdles that it needed to pass. And on June 11th, the rule repeal actually becomes active. It's part of the administrative procedure. But what is really happening is the rule passed in December actually revokes a rule passed in March of 2015, which provided very strong net neutrality protections under Title II.
Is the concern that internet providers will favor specific websites, specific content that perhaps they own, i.e. Comcast, granting favored nation status to specific channels or specific websites? Is that the concern?
Well, it's one of the concerns. Certainly the integration of the cable companies with content companies now is part of the story. But beyond that, your cable company, your ISP, will ultimately have the power to decide if they want you to look at content of any kind at all. They certainly have an economic incentive to drive you to content that they own or in some way have a agreement with to provide to you. But in many ways, they also have the power to just simply outright block you from content that they object to, say competitor content, for example.
So on July, on June 11th, they're going to be able to block me from, you know, whoever is their competitor?
Assuming that that's their choice. The ISPs are making a pretty solid case that they are not going to do such things, but they've also, in the same breath, been saying these rules were actually in effect since February, which was patently untrue as well. So it's hard to know. Legitimately, they have that power and authority to make that decision after June 11th, assuming there's no action in court before then.
Chris, forgive me. Are they monopolies? I mean, if my ISP blocked me from a specific site, I would drop that ISP and I would go to a competitor. Do I have that ability right now in most locations?
No. In fact, you call them a monopoly. It's actually an accurate description. Most internet service providers are actually leftovers from the 1970s cable arrangements, where each municipality had a cable franchise. And as we moved into the internet age, most of those cable franchises just naturally became internet service provider franchises as well, although the rules are a little bit different. In the Twin Cities, you do have a couple of different options, but in the outlying parts of the state, you certainly may not even have one solid broadband provider, but certainly not the sort of competition that would make the consumer protection angle much stronger than it could be.
How is this at all good for the consumer?
Well, the argument would be that the ISPs will be able to go into arrangements with certain types of content providers and provide you better service to the content that you use every day, or that it'll be able to make it a little bit cheaper. Some content will be faster. The content you don't necessarily need or lots of people don't need could be made slower in that arrangement. But really, there's very few benefits to the consumer that actually exist.
Right. The only person that benefits is the ISP because they get money from the websites that are willing to pay to have faster access to consumers. Right?
That is certainly a legitimate point of view on this, yes.
So a listener chimes in. It's definitely the right approach. Why should we have more government intruding in our lives? What would you say to that listener?
Well, regulation exists to fix market failure. And in this situation, because there is very limited competition, a protection of the consumer's rights in this arrangement is a legitimate use of government power. Now, if you want me to be less nerdy about it, I think I should be able, as a consumer, to choose what content I access online. And I don't really think it's any business of my ISP to tell me whether or not I can access that content and choose at what speed I can access that content, whether or not they like it. They get their money from me every month.
Right.
They're allowed to profit from that, and that's perfectly acceptable. But I think the choice on how the content I access on the internet, that should be mine. And what happens here is that there's a shift now that not only are they allowed to collect money from me, they're allowed to collect money from content providers that are trying to reach me. And I don't really get a say in whether or not that content is delivered in the way that I think it should be.
Is that the whole common carrier? I mean, ISPs are not technically defined as common carriers.
Well, that goes back. I mean, I don't know how nerdy you want me to get here.
Oh, get but, nerdy. Get in the weeds.
Okay, well, part of the problem here is that Congress has not done anything meaningful on internet regulation since 1996. And
really?
The Title II regulations that were passed in 2015, one argument against them is that the FCC was essentially treating internet service providers in 2015 and even today in 2018, essentially the way the internet looked in 1996.
Because they don't understand the internet. Didn't you watch those Facebook hearings? Congress doesn't understand the internet. They have no idea how the stuff goes to their computer screen. How are they supposed to regulate it? They're clueless.
It's magic.
Well, the correct answer to your question is to say to the FCC, you now have some authority to handle this. The FCC is supposed to be the experts. Congress should be giving power to the agency to make regulatory decisions. But in many ways, they've handcuffed the agency. And we've had a back and forth on net neutrality since a Republican administration handed down the first net neutrality provisions in 2004. So it's not it's being often portrayed as a sort of left and right or Democrat and Republican issue, but both Republican and Democratic commissions have supported net neutrality principles in the past.
A texter asks, does net neutrality violate First Amendment rights to my access to media, from a texter?
Well, no, because it's not the government that's preventing you from accessing certain content.
It's the provider you're paying, which is ridiculous.
Doesn't matter. The ISPs are not state actors. The First Amendment doesn't apply to their conduct.
Right.
But, Doctor, is this a corollary to the golden rule? The people with the gold make the rules?
In many ways it is, but it's much more of a philosophy issue. The current FCC is very pro-industry, and the industry has lobbied heavily for these rules for a long time and is even challenging the rules that are about to be repealed at the Supreme Court as well. So this is a multi-pronged situation, but this rule change doesn't resolve this. As soon as there's a new FCC, a Democratic-leaning commission, or a commission with a more liberal Republican in charge, net neutrality could come back just through a simple rulemaking proceeding.
Well, I'm
so the FCC's actually made this situation far more complicated than it needed to be. But again, much of that fault goes back to Congress for not telling the FCC how they wanted this handled.
Because they don't know.
AOL's coming back. AOL's coming back.
I still have AOL, so don't judge it.
I still have Earthlink. So I feel you, sister. Dr. Chris Terry, Assistant Professor, Media Ethics and Law at the University of Minnesota. We appreciate you talking frankly and openly about this and helping us all decipher what this really means. Thank you.
Thanks, Doc.
Yeah, you're welcome. Have a nice day.
He was great.
You too. Yeah, he was.
He knew a lot about this. I just cannot believe that it's going to be okay for Comcast to collect money from a website and they get faster access to me than, you know, the cat video website that can't afford to pay them, so I have to wait longer to see my cat videos. And that is so not okay. It's not okay. I mean, that's how I feel about it, obviously.
People with the money.
Just so Comcast can make more money. They make a boatload of money off me already. Enough.
Well, they're making, and I think the cable companies are making money now off internet and not off television channels.
For sure.
Not
yeah.
off, you know, selling bundles of right. HBO and Showtime and what have you. I think the real money, the profit streams are coming from the internet.
That's why they want more.
It'll be interesting. Hold on tight. We'll keep you posted here at CCO, and we'll have more when we come back on 830 WCCO.
We only have a few minutes left before the bottom of the hour break, but did I tell you that the kids have finally talked me into a dog?
Oh, really? I hope it's a big one. Really giant dog? Great Dane?
No. There are rules, obviously.
You need a really enormous dog. In fact, you should have more than one.
No.
Because the dog needs a friend.
No, this one will fit in my purse.
Really?
But Mark says it has to be at least 12 pounds, and I say like 4. We're going back.
You don't want one of those little microscopic yippy dogs?
You don't yip. Don't start.
The yippy dogs?
Look, I got to take care of it and pick up the poop. The poop better.
Dog.
It's still a negotiation.
That's an alleged dog.
Am I going to be allowed to take it on the plane? I used to travel with my first one.
Well, kudos to American Airlines. American Airlines is making things very clear. Insects, goats, and hedgehogs cannot be brought onto an American Airlines flight.
No one takes a goat on a flight.
Apparently, people have tried.
How about peacocks?
Oh, that's people.
And they ruin it. They ruin it for people who really need emotional support animals.
And they vote. Scary.
The airline revised its guidelines earlier this week for comfort animals on flights.
Insects are comfort animals, really.
A comfort insect. You haven't heard of that? Those who want to bring such animals on board now have to file paperwork 48 hours before a flight, and there are new restrictions on what types of animals are permitted. American said, "We support the rights of customers, from veterans to people with disabilities, with legitimate needs for a trained service or support animal. Unfortunately, untrained animals or insects can lead to safety issues for our team, our customers, and working dogs on board our aircraft. I'm up in arms. You are taking away my freedom as an American to bring a hedgehog on board my next flight.
Good for American
Airlines.
What
about my rights?
Shut this down. This is ridiculous. People are out of control.
I want to see the video of goats and hedgehogs.
You cannot
on
train
flights.
A roach. Sorry.
How do you know that?
It's 5:31. We're going to be done with this conversation.
I wonder if they'll allow roaches as brooches. Have you seen the roach brooches?
Yes.
They have little
wrong.
Chains.
Wrong. Because you fall asleep and then it's crawling on me and then I'm going to smash it into 1,000 pieces.
Really?
No patience for
people
this stupidity.
Do that?
I really
yeah,
they
don't.
They have diamond encrusted and everything. They're awesome.
They're but they're real roaches?
They're real roaches and they have little
live
chains.
Live roaches?
They decorate the roaches with little rhinestones.
Well, some people have too much money.
That's roach. That's roach abuse.
I need to shut that down. All right, I'll get off my soapbox. We're done. Okay, we're done with this conversation.
Thank you, American Airlines, for standing up for
right back.
Sanity.
It's 5:39. I read a story earlier this week that said a group of 13 and 14-year-olds have designed an app to help one of their elderly grandparents who was suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's. And I thought, you know, these kids are extraordinary. They see a problem, they see a need, and they use technology to help ease the pain. This is not a cure for anything, but they're trying to help with their own expertise.
If I could do it again, I'd go back and become a developer, a programmer.
So smart.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they want to help.
A lot of respect for these kids. They're in Hudson, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Liam Thorson is the Destination Imagination team member and developer, one of the developers of the app. And Paulette Mergendahl is the team manager of Destination Imagination. We are welcoming them both to the show. Hi, Liam and Paulette.
Hi, this is Paulette.
Hi, Paulette. Is Liam on the line with us?
Yeah.
Hi, Liam. How are you? This is Jordana and Paul.
Tell us the story.
It's going great.
Welcome to CCO. And first question, how did this get started? I mean, this was born out of a very real need, right?
Yeah. So we started with our DI project. So we came in the fall and we started brainstorming ideas for our DI project. So our challenge was the service learning challenge. And that is basically where we have to pick a community and address a need in that community. So we started coming up with ideas for communities and what needs to address in them. And then that led to us coming up with the memory loss project.
So is it your grandparent that has memory loss?
Yeah.
So tell us what you were looking to do to help that grandparent.
Well, I wasn't exactly looking to help that grandparent, more to help the community of memory loss. So
okay.
To do that, I built an app that would assist people with keeping track of their tasks and with note-taking and with reminders.
Can people with dementia use apps?
Yes, they can.
Okay. So it's not for their family. It's for them to actually learn how to use to help remind them when to take their meds or help if you know, call an emergency if they need help?
Yeah. It's also useful for caregivers who are assisting that family member.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you can set the app to have a helper, and after completing a task, it'll send that helper a text message. Say, for example, it'd be like, so-and-so is taking their pills.
Okay.
Fantastic.
No, that makes a lot of sense. By the way, the app is called Cortex, C-O-R-T-E-X. It's available for Android in Google Play as a free download. Paulette, can you talk a little bit about Destination Imagination? I know this is a national endeavor, right? And in fact, a worldwide project.
Actually, yes, it's worldwide. I believe it's 40 or 45 states are involved.
Hey, Paulette, can you get off speaker and pick up the phone? It's easier to hear you then.
I'm not on speaker. Is this better?
That's better.
Thank you, love.
Sorry,
much better.
Standing too close to Liam.
Okay.
I think there's like 45 states involved and over 30 countries. And then in May, actually next week, the teams come together in Tennessee I think like 15 at least, 15 countries will be represented and 40 states. And all of the teams compete in the same six challenges. All these teams from around the world will compete. And it's really a fun program because the six or seven challenges kind of cover a lot of different bases like science or engineering or art. And so kids can kind of pick and choose the way they want to lean toward their goal. But in this case, they just did project learning and they all kind of brought their own talents in to kind of complete the challenge and the solution together. So
well, how do 13 and 14-year-olds make an app? I mean, do they know how to code? Do they know how to create all of this? Or is that why they need a grown-up?
I would say not many do, but I will say this one does. The other thing about DI that should be made really clear is that the team manager gets to do nothing. All we can do is help them learn things if they ask questions, help them learn how to use tools and different materials and whatnot. We can also sort of get them started down the path, but all of the ideas are theirs. All of the work has to be theirs. We cannot help them make their solution or they're disqualified. So it is completely team run. It is completely team made. And in this case, I'm here to tell you, I don't have a clue how this kid did this. I don't have a, I was not a help whatsoever to him. He just learns this stuff on his own. He's amazing.
Liam, is anybody using the app?
Well, not necessarily yet, but it has gained a lot of focus.
So
specifically, it has won a couple awards. Mm-hmm. For example, it won App of the Month by MIT's App Inventor, which I actually used to create the app.
Huh.
Very impressive. So you haven't used it with your grandparent yet, have you?
She's not the most tech-savvy person in the world.
Well, I imagine that would be a challenge because, you know, folks with Alzheimer's or dementia are at an advanced age anyway, so they're not necessarily going to be so app-savvy.
But there's a spectrum with dementia, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And one of the things that we learned, one of the other aspects of this particular challenge was an event. These kids had to host an event where they explained their project or got feedback on their project. So we took the app and the kids went and met up with some folks at a retirement home or assisted living home, and they showed it to them. And one of the things that they took away from that was that this would be a very handy app for people, Liam, would you say, in their 60s, 70s, maybe where they have a little bit more tech-savvy skills, and they also are on the earlier stages of memory loss. Mm-hmm. So they can function in their own home, mm-hmm. but yet they're passing reminders via the system to the people that, you know, are watching out for them, like their sons and daughters who are at work and hoping that their mom or dad took their medication. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of a neat system where if they just follow along their app, all of the alerts go out to the people that are, you know, caring for them.
There's absolutely a need for this. Liam, what advice would you have for other young people who might be interested in coding and creating their own app, or maybe the parents of young people listening? You did it. Other people can do it. What advice do you have?
Well, just take a couple of classes, just research a little bit, a quick Google search, and you can learn a lot of things. Like, I learned this program actually at a Coder Dojo class, which is a program in the Twin Cities. And I did that a couple summers ago, and that's what got me started. With
Coder Dojo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool.
Liam Thorson and Paulette Mergendahl, members and managers of Team Destination Imagination, well done. We're so glad you're in our community. And Liam, keep thinking of great ways to enhance the lives of those around us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you both.
I know it's tough for people now to be thinking about using this app, but if you are also a digital native, you know, people in their 30s and 40s and 50s are used to using apps. And as they get older, it's going to be more natural for them to use.
I want to hear more about Coder Dojo.
Coder Dojo.
And I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that they can create apps. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are tools out there to help. You don't have to start from ground zero.
My sixth grader has a coding class. It's like one of their sections in school.
I think that's one of the most important things you can do as a young person is to take coding classes. If they're available, go for it. I mean, I know there are a lot of options for sports, and that's great, but learn to code. you will make a lot more money over the course of your career if you can program, if you can code.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Good stuff. So thanks for joining us on the show. I want to remind everybody that Thursday at the Minnesota History Center is our first ever Conversations, a day-long discussion on the subject of weather. Impacts us all every single day. We're going to go in-depth on every aspect of the weather. We're going to be live at the Historical Society from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. this Thursday, the 17th. And you know what? Admission is absolutely free. You can hear it all day here on CCO, but you can join us live from the lobby of the Minnesota History Center, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday. So come on by and listen to our conversation.
Or listen on an app. Listen on the radio.com app. Streaming in real time. Yep. We hope to hear from you on Thursday. It's going to be a great show. Before Android watches, before Apple watches, people would strap their Rolodex to their wrist. So that they could flip through.
I don't think you can sell it at Wixon, though.
It's very analog. That may come back. If vinyl came back, I think wearing your Rolodex may come back.
It's retro.
So you may have started a trend.
I'm ahead of my time.
You may not have.
Tomorrow, we got a great show lined up for you. There is a Twins game during the day, but we hope to be on the air by 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to the Twins right here on CCO and then us. In New York, a Times report came out that said across the city, black people are more than 8 times likely to get arrested for marijuana than white people, black and Hispanic people. So we want to know if it's the same here in Minnesota. We're going to talk with an expert tomorrow and get those answers for you.
Okay. And some other stuff. There's a lot going on. And
Governor Dayton is going to be joining
us. Right.
We're going to talk tax code and what he's going to do with the budget and what kind of funding he wants for education.
Hey, soak up this evening. This is the day we prayed for months ago, weeks ago. It's here.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.